Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of Just Jiggle the Cable, It'll Be Fine, Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad. Clever intro here. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today with great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or you're just weird, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also brought to you by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever. Pay a lot less than in-store prices. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Newly redesigned several months ago. It's a good day to be a geek, guys.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good day.
And if we say it enough, it's going to be a thing.
And for those of you who are listening when we're new next week, happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We want you to be our Valentine.
We love you all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But unfortunately, I've been booked solid. I've had no social engagements that I've been able to answer to. Justin, have you been able to attend a soiree of some sort?
I have. Please welcome to the stage, Miss Dolly Parton.
Pilot party! Pilot party!
Pilot party!
I thought we blew the budget last month with the Beatles.
Yeah, I pulled some strings.
Oh, a happy 77th, Dolly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I pulled some strings. What can
America's
I say?
Angel. I mean,
she is.
Nothing better ever happened to her.
No.
Go ahead.
No. Anyway, so I don't even know how to begin this cleverly, so I'm just going to launch right into it. I watched Ultraman 80.
Oh. Oh.
For those of you who don't know, it's a Japanese show from 1980. Here we go.
Most of your pilot party are Japanese shows.
This is live action.
Holy shit.
From 1980.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I should have clarified.
Strap in.
All right. Here we go.
So anyway, welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based on the first episode. Why the first episode? That's a good question, and I'll get back to you. It's spring all over Japan, and a strange phenomenon is occurring.
That's how seasons work.
Yeah. Particularly this season of this show. Spring has sprung on Japan, and a strange phenomenon is occurring that can only be caused by monsters.
It's time for outdoor fucking.
Starts today.
First of May. Go ahead.
Sadly, not all is well in springtime in Japan. Grass, trees, even rocks are dying or losing their color, and all because of monsters. But no one seems to realize it. No one except Takashi Yamoto. Takashi is a somewhat bumbling junior high school science teacher. He's even late for the first day of his on the job. Like, they're having a presentation to announce the two new teachers. He is one of them, and he is late.
I mean, 50-50 shot.
Yeah. During class, there's a small earthquake, and Takashi thinks he sees a monster lurking in the clouds. Upon hearing this, the students ridicule him, and he takes them out to a nearby field to search for clues. Because, you know, education.
Sure.
Meanwhile, at the United Nations Defense Army Base, Kazuki Amoya and the UGM utility government members feel the earthquake is due to a monster and goes to investigate.
The UGN at the Undab.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you caught the dab part.
Cause... Yeah. Kazuki and Takashi meet in the field and realize they're investigating the same thing. Later, Takashi thinks he sees the monster again and sounds the alert. No one else saw it, but he gets reprimanded by the assistant principal. But as she's about to chew him out, the monster finally reveals itself and begins to destroy the city.
That'll get the monster on a list.
The UGM springs into action, but their weapons are no use. Takashi finds a secluded place and becomes Ultraman 80 from Nebula M78.
Okay, yeah.
But if anybody sees him transform, he can no longer stay on Earth. He grows in size and begins to fight the monster. And lose. Every attack is countered and the monster hurls him into buildings. Soon, the blue jewel on Ultraman's chest starts to flash red. Apparently, he can only be in his Ultraman form for 3 minutes. And he's already wasted 2 getting his butt handed to him. Using the last of his strength, he gets it together and saves the day. Because reasons.
Okay.
Later, the assistant principal continues to scold Takashi and says that he should be fired. But Kazuki has made a deal with the school, allowing him to work at the UGM part-time. Kazuki senses Takashi's talent for spotting monsters and wants to help. The show clearly has a budget worse than the original Power Rangers, and I loved every freaking second of it. Now, admittedly, I love bad monster movies, and this was right up my alley. But it's a Japanese show from 1980, so your mileage may vary. Now for my predictions. Takashi continues to balance working at school and the UGM and his secret identity. There's a few close calls, but he's never quite found out. That is, until he falls in love. For you see, Takashi talks in his sleep. At first, his new bride thinks he's just having weird dreams, and then she starts seeing a pattern of behavior. He's never around when Ultraman 80 is. Eventually, she figures it out. And what does she do? Nothing. Because she loves him and will keep his secret forever. Kind of touching, actually. I give it 4 out of 5 monsters that are clearly guys in rubber suits. And I think I saw a zipper in that one scene.
That the secret identity thing is startlingly similar to back in comics, Action Comics 1051.
Okay.
They gave Superman a secret identity back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's Luthor use Manchester Black, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
science.
Yeah.
If anyone finds out that Clark Kent is Superman besides his immediate family, they get an aneurysm and die.
Okay.
Except Perry. Because
he almost
was, like,
died.
Right,
Superman
there
was right there and he whisked him to safety. So, like, when you're like, if anyone finds out, I'm like, oh my God, are they, is DC ripping off Ultraman 80 right now?
No, Ultraman awesome. Just has to leave Earth.
Okay, all right.
Well, technically, that would be good for Superman 2 in this regard.
Yeah, he would leave Earth. That way, no one can...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Justin.
You're welcome.
So, there are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are relegated to the dustbins of history. This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it, should we reboot it, revive it, or refuse it? It's 1893. A famous U.S. Marshal is transporting the notorious John Bly and his gang to trial. Unfortunately, the Marshal is killed, leading to the escape of Bly and the gang. Such an injustice cannot go unanswered. And so the robber barons of the Westerfield Club hired a Harvard law graduate to apprehend the gang that killed Briscoe County Sr. Who do they hire? Briscoe County Jr. The adventures of Briscoe County Jr. lasted just a single season on Fox before its cancellation. It falls under the genre of weird Western. Think Jules Verne meets Wild Wild West. A lot of the plot centers around Briscoe tracking down Bly and an artifact called the Orb that has the power to give supernatural abilities to those that use it. The show is full of anachronisms brought to us by Professor Wickwire, played by John Astin, and a whole host of other characters that round out the comedy. Each episode is trying to keep the comedy just under the threshold of too much, and mostly succeeds. So 30 years later, the adventures of Briscoe County Jr. Review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
Review.
Yeah.
I want to revive. I want Bruce Campbell back as Briscoe County Jr. 30 years later. You know,
he's killed off in the first episode and Briscoe County Jr. takes over.
Yeah, but not Briscoe County the third.
Junior.
Yes. Or Briscoe County Jr.'s twin brother, Briscoe County Jr. Brosco County, played by
Brosco County Esquire.
Briscoe Country.
Briscoe Country. Yeah, absolutely review this one. This was a fun one.
All right. So I've got a show to describe you. Might be real, might be fake.
Oh, okay. Good.
No wonder Tom, an agoraphobic puzzle creator, has been having trouble coming up with new ideas. So one day, in typing up a game on his computer, he accidentally creates AI. The wisecracking and occasionally rude AI named Omni immediately downloaded the encyclopedia from a CD-ROM. Did I mention that this is like late 80s, early 90s?
Sure.
And now wants access to more things. And the plot centers around Omni wanting to learn something and Tom having to go outside, facing his fears on some adventure in order to learn about it.
Okay.
No,
let him do the... Or is this... Is this the only one?
Well, I...
Because last time you compared two shows.
We had two.
Well, the
we
other one
from.
Is Small Wonder.
And, yeah.
A robotics engineer creates a lifelike android in the form of a 10-year-old girl dubbed Vicky. The plot centers around the family trying to keep Vicky's real nature a secret from their neighbors. The comedy often arises from the family's efforts to disguise her in various ways. The actual real human brothers get rich quick schemes, and Vicky's literal interpretation of instructions.
Okay, Small Wonder is real.
Yes, and the other one is not.
Yeah, I liked Small Wonder as a kid.
See, and I'd never heard of it. I was like,
she's
what
a
the hell is
small wonder. Yeah, it was
I had never heard of it.
It was kind of like the sitcom Out of This World.
Yes,
and you know,
have you heard of that one?
No,
this was in the weird phase in the 80s where every sitcom had to have some kind of sci-fi hook to it.
For Out of This World, the main character is half alien, half human. She can stop time by touching her fingers together.
Yeah, before Zach Morris was like, time out.
No, yeah.
And then he did something scummy.
And her, you know, she can unfreeze a person by touching them and then, you know, restart time. And her dad is off world, but he can talk to her through a little triangle that lights up.
Glowing triangular thing. But yeah, I mean, Small Wonder was great. You know, I liked Small Wonder. They should revive that.
Out of This World sounds awful.
Oh, it was.
Yeah,
yes.
it wasn't very good.
And quite honestly, I watched some of Small Wonder. It's also awful.
Oh, it is. Yeah. But they should revive it anyway.
Yeah. And for Out of This World, the opening credit sequence shows the dad, you know, saying goodbye. He's just in an astronaut suit.
Oh, do you remember the song? Would you like to swing on a star?
Yeah.
Carry moonbeams home in a jar. You don't remember this?
No.
Hudson Hawks does that song better. Yes,
yeah, but that was the title to.
Yeah, that's what they. Yeah. Anyway, we've gotten off topic.
Wow.
Once I heard No Wonder,
you're all right. So
once I heard No Wonder, I'm like, oh, please let the other one be Small Wonder.
Yeah,
because that'll be the easiest time we've ever played this game.
No Wonder kind of sounds like Electric Dreams that we talked about on that other show we do.
A little bit, yeah. All right,
I enjoyed it.
I'm going to run down some trailers.
Okay.
Polite Society. Upended expectations in a traditional Indian family. Mix in some action and perhaps a bit of horror for a likely fun mix. Sharper. A stylish dramatic thriller featuring Bucky trying to steal billions of dollars from Lorc Farquaad. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Okay, it's coming from the mind of Judy Blume, so it's likely to be good if they keep the source material. I definitely laughed more than once during the trailer. Also, Judy Blume is like one of the most banned authors in the country.
Yeah.
Fair. So I really hope that they keep this true to the book.
I hear Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And I hear Ray Stevens.
It's me, Margaret.
Renfield.
Yes.
This looks so good.
Yes.
And then Nicolas Cage shows up and it just gets weird.
I know.
Evil Dead Rise. The Good. Necronomicon. Check. Chainsaw. Check. Creepy Deadites? Check. The Bad. Focus on body horror gore effects?
Boo.
No Bruce Campbell? He's producing. He's not in it? Well, this can be safely skipped. Bo is afraid. Joaquin Phoenix is held captive by Nathan Lane in a mind screw of a visual feast that would make Terry Gilliam go, wait, WTF?
You know what?
Marlowe, I want nothing more for film than for Raymond Chandler-style detective noir films to become the next big thing in film. Trends are cyclical, right?
Yeah.
Liam Neeson as a detective in a noir film. Chef's kiss. Linoleum. Question, why does every Jim Gaffigan role look just so, so sad? It may be charming eventually, but...
He voiced Johnny Thunder in season 2 of Stargirl.
Uh-huh.
And that was the only one I've seen where it didn't look sad.
Yeah, he just, wow.
And I didn't even see him, so that's why, yeah.
Mm. Baby Ruby. Okay. Baby horror, thriller, gore stuff in the trailer. That's nah from me, dog.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No.
Hello Tomorrow. This is a Fallout prequel.
Yeah, it looks like
I
a Fallout
prequel. I don't care what it's actually about. TGC Liz got it right. This is a Fallout prequel. Just replace Moon with Vault.
It's got a lot of the same vibes.
Same retro futuristic 50s art deco look to everything.
Or Outer Worlds.
Maybe.
Yeah. Which is Fallout in space.
Yeah. I really want it to just be Fallout, though.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get another one eventually.
Maybe. History of the World Part 2. Okay. Mel Brooks is involved.
Yes.
Mel Brooks introduces the trailer.
Yes.
It shows great promise. And I will remain convinced until proven otherwise that this would have been better as a 100-minute movie than as a series.
Probably,
just
yes.
To keep the writing tight. I have this sneaky suspicion by episode 3, I'm going to be like, I don't care. And that hurts me.
Yeah.
Also, they should have called it History of the World Part 3.
Yeah. Just because.
All right, guys. I've got a question, and there's good answers to it, but I want wrong answers only. Henry Cavill was out as Superman. Then he was back in. Then he's back out again. But they're not going to stop making Superman movies.
No.
Who's taking on the red cape and outer worn underwear next?
Rowan Atkinson.
Ooh, nice.
We're doing wrong answers, right?
Yeah. Wrong okay. Answers. I mean,
Carrot Top.
I mean, the obvious choice is Nicolas Cage in a Kingdom Come film version.
I mean, he already has a suit.
Michael Cera.
I was going to go Andrew Garfield. I mean, he's not working for Sony anymore.
Kirsten Dunst.
Michael Caine.
Michael Keaton. Complete the set.
Yes.
But I mean, really, when we get down to it, I want Darren Criss. He's the voice of Superman in the last few DCAU movies.
Yeah.
And his name's Darren, only spelt different. I want Darren to be Superman.
Darren is Superman in my mind.
See? Now we'd be able to see it in credits. On to some reviews.
I didn't have anything to add, so just shrug. I know, theater of the mind.
Strange World on Disney Plus. If you have the twist spoiled for you early, it's going to color your perception of the entire show. My spouse made a joke. I couldn't unsee it. That was the twist. I was making jokes the whole time about it. I was almost angry that she'd guessed it. I wasn't angry, just almost, because I was blissfully ignorant until that moment. Anyway, a former adventurer, now a farmer, has to track down the cause of a crop failure. His family tags along, and it's a fun adventure, and Splat is adorable. It's an A.
Okay.
Encanto, live at the Hollywood Bowl. A lot less funny than the other Hollywood Bowl movie I've seen. But in terms of highlighting the music of the movie, it's pretty good. Don't understand why they used handheld mics instead of over-the-ear models. And there are definitely times when the microphone control was a problem. Otherwise, a great way to spend 45 minutes. Less time than that if you fast forward past the child chorus short film that they decided to ram into the middle of it. B+. That 90s show, episode 1. Remember the first episode of Fuller House? Remember how
vaguely.
It was fine?
It was fine.
Remember all the interruptions for old actors coming into the scene and everyone just cheering for way too long than is right or proper?
And it was fine.
Get ready for 30 minutes of that as each of the principal actors shows up. Get ready for Red, pause for cheer. Kitty, pause for cheer. Eric, Donna, just wait. It just keeps on going. Get ready for all manner of 90s references like, hey, you remember Zima? Also, get ready for relationships that never grew, like Red and Eric's, or a truly depressing set of relationships, like Donna and Eric, or Kelso and Jackie, and carbon copies of previous characters, like Kelso and his son, Kelso, or Fez and Ozzy. Like the first episode of Fuller House, it's fine. The rest of the show, it might be great. The rest of Fuller House was good, but it's mildly troublesome that 25 years after that 70s show first aired, Kurtwood Smith is still the best part. It's a B.
So it's like The Force Awakens in that, hey, you remember all this stuff you liked? Here it is again.
You remember this? You liked this. This is fine, right?
You like this. Enjoy it!
You like how Red and Kitty didn't redecorate once?
Fine.
In the last 25 years?
You gotta recognize the house.
It's fine.
It's fine. Darren, did you watch anything?
Off of my notes, real quick, I have watched most of the National Treasure series on Disney Plus.
Oh, right.
Edge of History. And first episode is fine in the general sense. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a lot of setup, that stuff. For the most part, it's good. Yep. There's some weird kind of relationship melodrama. You know, sometimes characters forget to share the brain cell that they have. And as a result, you know, you get some stupid situations. Catherine Zeta-Jones as the villain is remarkable. And just she puts a lot of scene chewing into her role. And it's great. It is a National Treasure without Nicolas Cage, which mm-hmm. is a bit weird. But that doesn't necessarily make it bad. And it's not like they pretend his character didn't exist. In fact, there are several callbacks where like, hey, you see the glasses? Hey, you see the pipe thing? Yeah? Uh-huh. You know? And Riley is back from the National Treasure movies as well, as well as a few other returning characters. So it is very much in line with that franchise. So if you like National Treasure, and I do, and you like adventure stuff in general, Jess is a wonderful protagonist. She is a dreamer, as in like someone who is here under the Dream Act. And if she gets caught trying to find this treasure, she's going to be deported from the country. So, you know, there's some stakes there as well. So I do recommend it. It's a watch it. I don't know if I'll give it a B for a letter grade, because there are some things that I would tweak, mostly the stupid relationship drama that happens with everything involving young adults. Because it's very clear that Disney wanted to model this toward the CW crowd as Ooh. Far as that kind of audience mm. goes. But if you can get past that, it's a fun watch. I made my wife watch Willow. Mm-hmm. She had never seen it, and I want to watch the Disney Plus show, and I need her to have the context in order to do that. So as a result, I rewatched it for the first time since the theatrical run.
Okay.
God damn, is this movie fun.
I haven't seen it in years.
It's still good.
It's still good. The scene where Val Kilmer starts falling down the mountain and ends up a giant snowball is just...
I didn't see it in theaters, but I think I saw it after that, and I haven't seen it since.
Yeah, I highly recommend going back and watching
okay.
it. Okay. It's so good.
I watched it 2 days ago.
Is it on Disney Plus?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I knew this new series. Okay.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus.
Cool.
So go watch it. It's recommended. If you haven't seen it yet, if you are into fantasy, Lord of the Rings stuff, anything like that, with a little bit more humor, then I think you'll enjoy Willow. Because Willow is definitely worth your time. Also, I watched Batman and Superman Battle of the Super Sons.
How was that?
It was all right.
Okay.
I liked the Super Sons book, which this is kind of loosely based off.
Yes.
As in, you've got 12-year-old John Kent, you know, and Damian Wayne.
As he should be.
And yes. Damian Wayne, who is of an undeterminate age because they keep doing whatever they want in the
33.
Comics. Sure.
He's like the Annabelle character.
Yeah, I mean,
you
he's
know,
like...
he's actually, like, really old.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
See, what they do is they don't let him die, and then they dip him in the Lazarus pit.
Yeah.
I got a comics question for next month.
Fine.
Oh boy, I'm looking forward to that.
It's fine. It's fine.
But anyway, the movie features Superman having to tell John that he is Superman, because until this point, John has had a normal childhood until he, you know, has a little bit of a breakdown because Clark is never home because of his work, and he runs off and inadvertently sets the grain silo on fire with his heat vision, which is a lot better than in the comics how he discovered his heat vision. Which, if you don't remember, trigger warning for those of you who have small animals.
Oh, yeah.
A hawk grabbed John's cat and was flying away, and John tried to stop the hawk and ended up incinerating both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that.
He should have had a Kryptonian kitty.
There's one running around.
Yeah.
I did a long box on that one.
Yeah. But
I should go back to the super animals.
Anyway,
You know, only if you can do something new and interesting with him.
Cal, Clark, whatever, takes John on a little bit of a flight, you know, a joy flight. So, you know, my dad is Superman. He's like the second best superhero. Because John has a huge hero worship thing for Batman going on. They go to Gotham City. They watch Batman, you know, beating up the Penguin and some thugs on a rooftop. John's like, shouldn't we step in and help? Oh, no. He gets upset when I do that. Yeah.
I did see that clip.
Yeah. They go back to the Batcave. Damian is a dick to John while they're scanning him to find out if he has any other powers. The answer is inconclusive. We don't know if he's going to develop any more. Yes, he will.
He'll develop them all.
Yeah, but by the time the movie... Well, not all. By the time the movie ends. Still not invulnerable.
Well, it doesn't have to be while the movie ends.
Yeah, but yeah, he'll eventually get all of them, yes. The Pokemon, he'll get all the set. But, you know, everything seems fine. And then there's a distress call from the Justice League. Batman and Superman have to take off. You know, turns out the Watchtower was falling to Earth. And
what did you do, Flash?
Just some kind of space debris hit it. At least they assume it was space debris.
It's never just space debris.
So let's jump forward a bit.
Okay.
Because that's what the movie does. And Damian's just hanging out at the back computer, and Batman is walking up quietly and then tries to stick a jellyfish, space jellyfish on him. It's Starro time.
Yeah.
It's Starro. The thing, you know, usually in interpretations of Starro, the thing is already like, it's a starfish and it's already like on their faces, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this version is clever, and so it hides and then only comes out through their mouth in what is a... Must have been fun to record the audio for that.
So it's a gold from Stargate SG-1?
And it climbs onto their face. And, yeah, the whole thing. Eventually, Damian has to, like, try to rescue John from school. Doesn't quite beat up a bully that it attacked John. Does give him essentially a Vulcan nerve pinch that paralyzes him for a day, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
He deserves it. And he does it to him multiple times. Throughout the course of the movie, I should say, not all at once.
This is 6 days in a row you can't move.
Yeah.
Peach.
You know, no, he just shows up every 24 hours. The kid's toe starts to wiggle.
There is a
money.
Damian's trying to get John to leave school. Lois shows up to like, hey, John, do you want to like go eat some candy and have some ice cream? And John's like, oh, yeah, my mom is definitely possessed now. They try to get to the Batwing to fly away. Starro Lois jumps on board and starts bashing on the cockpit. So what do? John heat visions her in the face and she falls off into a pond where she coughs up what's left of the Starro and is now okay. Did I mention they were going like 200 miles per hour when she hit the water?
Eh.
It's fine.
It's soft.
It's fine.
It's water.
Soft water.
Yeah.
Not that hard water stuff.
Yeah.
Long story short.
Taking a shower with hard water, it sucks. Soft water is better.
Long story short, the Super Sons go to the Watchtower where they have to take on some of the Titans, some of the Justice League, Superman and Batman, find out that there is a giant version of Starro, a hive mind, if you will, that is about the size of the room that we are in right now. And they decide to knock the Watchtower satellite out of orbit to cause it to hit the atmosphere, and that'll burn the thing up because they don't like heat. Of course, they also resign themselves to their own deaths because we can't get off of the thing now. But it's okay. Superman recovers in enough time to catch the Watchtower, and the day is saved. And Jonathan gets a hit at his Little League baseball game, and Damian is there to once again knock out the bully. And the day is saved.
Thanks to the Powerpuff Girls?
Yeah. It's a fun movie. It's a kind of a, I mean, I don't want to say low stakes because the world is at stake, but also you can tell that this is, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to get badly hurt except for Lex Luthor, who, this is great. Lex is the president of the United States in this movie. Mm-hmm. Lois goes to him for help after finding out about Starro. And he's like, ha, so I was right. I was right all this time. You told me I was being paranoid, whatever. And then proceeds to reveal that he is, in fact, already a Starro.
Hmm.
Lois pulls out a lighter and some hairspray and just sets him on fire right then and there. And I have a feeling she would have done it even if she didn't know. But yeah.
Just to be on the safe side.
It's a solid B. It's a see it. Whether you rent it through Gamefly, which is how I got it, because they also rent out movies, or if you manage to pick it up, because it's like $10 at the store right now. So definitely worth a watch.
Cool. Justin, have you watched any movies?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay. Well, in that case, the last thing to do is...
Oh!
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, so how many of us here have seen Alien Resurrection?
And?
Okay, just Chad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there is a scene in Alien Resurrection where Sigourney Weaver makes an over, behind the back, half-court basketball shot,
mm-hmm.
right? And we all know how that's been done before, like, you know, movie magic or they edit mm-hmm. it. Now, she did that herself on the first try.
Hmm.
Yeah. See, when a day came to shoot the scene, the director wanted to have the ball dropped in from above after capturing Weaver throwing it, rather than wait for her to sink the shot herself, saying, quote, oh, it'll probably take you about 200 takes. Weaver insisted. She made the shot on the very first take.
Thank you.
Sigourney Mother Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Queen of the Geeks.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in that case, Monsieur Kent.
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice for our 150th episode, my next movie is Morbius.
Yeah!
Wait, do it with me. It's Morbin time!
This month, however, the fates were kind and gave me Antonio Banderas in his second best role, playing the precursor to his most famous role, Puss in Boots. This month, I watched The Mask of Zorro.
Wait, isn't Zorro and Puss in Boots in that universe the same?
No.
I hope so.
It's 1821, and Zorro has been a thorn in the side of the Spanish for a long time. So Don Rafael Montero, named for the strongest turtle, sets a trap for Zorro by staging the public execution of three random innocent peasants. Zorro stops the execution, and the trap is further foiled by two children, the Murrieta brothers, who push a statue onto a bevy of riflemen. Zorro thanks the boys by giving them a reward of a silver medallion. Despite his success, Zorro's alter ego, Don Diego de la Vega, is arrested that night. That same night sees his home burnt down, his wife shot in the back, and his daughter kidnapped to be raised by his mortal enemy. All in all, not a great night. Fast forward 20 years, and the Murrieta brothers are now bandits and con men. They're eventually found out and cornered, where the older brother, Joaquin, is captured by Captain Harrison Love, but instead of submitting to being captured, he commits suicide by shooting himself in the chest. Love then beheads the corpse to claim the bounty, and the silver medallion from Zorro is reclaimed by the other brother, Alejandro, later that night. Rafael returns to California after those 20 years with his adopted daughter, Elena, and a plan to use the gold from the land to buy California from Santa Ana. It's not terribly important. Just know that he needs gold. The return of his nemesis and his daughter motivates Diego de la Vega to escape from prison to retrieve what's his and exact his vengeance. Sticking with me so far? Two men, each wanting vengeance. Old Zorro on his old nemesis, soon to be new Zorro on the army captain for killing his brother.
Yes.
Old Zorro recognizes the silver medallion and offers to train Alejandro in the art of swordsmanship, etc., to better exact his revenge. And so begins the training montage, the swashbuckling, the horse riding, and the dancing, etc. It's at this point where the movie goes from a dramatic film with a few bits of comedy to a comedy adventure in the vein of the old Errol Flynn Robin Hood movies, where our dashing hero is fighting and smiling the whole time, with scenes of swinging from chandeliers, fighting two or three at once, and racing off on horseback to an exciting score. In the course of these events, Elena learns that Raphael's not her father. She has an erotic sword fight with the new Zorro, more on that later, and Raphael's plan to kill the peasants and slaves is revealed. In the end, the good folk win, the bad folk are thrown off a cliff, or buried by a cartload of gold bars. Coming in the last... This movie is coming in the last of the era of practical effects. You know, like 1998, before they decided that they're going to CGI a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So the explosion at the end of this movie is just... Mwah. Just absolute... Don't even watch all the movie if you don't dig it. Just watch the end with that explosion. So, the good. Antonio Banderas and Anthony Hopkins are remarkable in their roles. Catherine Zeta-Jones is amazing, as always, this time in the role of Elena. As I said, the special effects, they're practical and polished, with only a couple of them looking like holdovers from the 1960s. But I think that's probably intentional. You know, very... theatrical Princess Bridey, you know, when you've got the one perfectly horizontal tree branch to be able to swing from. It's like, okay, you're doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
And you're showing me this on purpose. So, as to that erotic sword fight, okay, it's well done. It's well choreographed and so forth, but this is the one part of the film that simply didn't age well. It's not as bad as the flirty Affleck Daredevil fight. I mean, so be assured there at least. The problem is that through the fight, Elena is shown to be competent, maybe even an equal to Zorro in terms of the sword fighting. So when he eventually wins, and his victory plan is to use his sword to cut her clothes so that they fall off of her, it's a problem. You know, the movie's PG-13, nothing's shown. It's the idea. Now, that being the case, that was my only problem with it. And this one is a solid swashbuckling be like me. Because it's really good.
I've seen it, yeah.
With no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly, check out news and reviews not on the podcast on the website geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversations. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What? And Week 3. Then head over to your... Then head over to our YouTube channel to see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. For Kent Harris, our Ringmaster. For Darren Wright, our Taskmaster. For Justin White, our Toastmaster. I'm Chad Savage, our Mustard Plaster. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.